Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is June 21, 2010, and you're listening to show number 34 of Who's Reading the Organon. We're going to review a little of aphorism number 96 today, and then continue on with 97, 98, and hopefully 99. We're going to also have a little bit of inspiration motivation from our Twitter tweets, one that started off today from a person named Rotovation and was retweeted by I Am One and then retweeted again by Off G. It says, "The fundamental delusion of humanity is to suppose that I am here and you are out there." And that is a quote by Yasutani Roshi. And there are a few more. One from Cicero. "In nothing do men more nearly approach the gods than in giving health to men." Oh, I think that Hahnemann would like that one. And then we have a quote from Mignon McLaughlin from a book, The Second Neurotics Notebook, that was published in 1966. It says, "My doctor is nice. Every time I see him, I'm ashamed of what I think of doctors in general." Uh-oh. Doesn't sound so good. That wasn't so positive. Okay, well, let's turn back to Plato. I hope he has something better to say. "The greatest mistake in the treatment of diseases is that there are physicians for the body and physicians for the soul, although the two cannot be separated." Oh, Plato's onto something, don't you think? All the way back then, he knew about the mind-body connection, and he was trying to teach that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
There's one more from Jeff Miller. "Body and soul cannot be separated for purposes of treatment, for they are one and indivisible. Sick minds must be healed as well as sick bodies." And now Vera is going to review yesterday's show, Aphorism 96.
Okay, I just really wanted to hover on Aphorism 96, even though we did it yesterday, because I like this definition so much, having known some so-called hypochondriacs and seen how miserable they were within the system. As they went to doctors and they would be told, "You're just a hypochondriac. Your illness is psychosomatic. Go away and leave us alone." And these people are suffering. Just to reread the aphorism briefly, I'll just reread the aphorism itself and not the footnote. "Besides this, patients themselves differ so much in their dispositions that some, especially the so-called hypochondriacs and other persons of great sensitiveness and impatient of suffering, portray their symptoms in too vivid colors, and in order to induce the physician to give them relief, describe their ailments in exaggerated expressions."
Mm-hmm.
And this is something we need to watch out for in both directions. First of all, not to underestimate it when we sense there's an exaggeration. And secondly, not to panic too much in the exaggeration, but rather to try to bring the patient down to earth and get a more exact description. I find that one way to do that in these types of situations is consistently to ask for examples. I remember the funniest time I asked, there was a girl I was treating who was telling me how she drinks too much Diet Coke. No, this is not an advert for Diet Coke. But she says she drinks too much of the stuff. And she drinks so much and she feels so bad from it. And I asked her, how much do you drink? And I expected to hear, you know, a couple of 2 liter bottles a day or something like that. No, no, she drinks 2 small bottles a week. And it's too much. So when we ask for the examples, actual examples, then our so-called hypochondriacs can come back down to earth, partly because they know we're listening to them, so they don't need to exaggerate. And even if they say it was a small pain, we'll take it seriously. And partly because their focus is now more precise, less on I am suffering, but more on what this is. Less on I am suffering and nobody cares, which is part of it, because usually people who come with the label of hypochondriac, they've been basically ignored and ridiculed for many years. And there's something quite sad about that. I know of one person who he had a really bad problem in his neck, and he didn't realize the extent of it. He just felt ill the whole time, and this was going on for a couple of years. And all his friends made fun of him. They said, you're just a hypochondriac. You're constantly complaining. Finally, he got to the right doctor and the right X-ray and the right MRI, and they found out that he had a life-threatening condition and needed immediate operation. So I recommend to take hypochondriac seriously. I mean, not I recommend it. Hahnemann recommends it. It says assume that they're very sensitive. Assume that they're very impatient of suffering, but don't assume by any means that they're telling lies.
Right. So there you go. Don't make any assumptions. Just take it as they say it.
What I like here, also one more word about this aphorism, then we'll move on, is very often we know of Hahnemann as this irritable, sarcastic, very funny but very sarcastic person, very critical, very much lauding homeopathy and basically consigning conventional medicine to the cesspits of existence. But,
well, it was kind of drastic measures back then.
But in 96, as in other aphorisms, as in the footnote at the beginning of Humanity Sighing, Waiting for Relief, in 96, Hahnemann's compassion really comes out, to my mind. His compassion for his patients. Don't assume the person is lying. This person is suffering. It may be different to the way you would suffer. This person is suffering from something small, but they're impatient of the suffering. They're very sensitive, and the suffering is interfering with their action and relate to it. And this presents a certain picture of Hahnemann to me as someone who cares very deeply about his patients.
Yes, as all homeopaths do. I will give them credit because I know they got into the profession. They're healers. And they want to see suffering end. So we're going to go to aphorism 97.
Okay, would you like to read it, Debbie?
Thank you. Other individuals of an opposite character, however, partly from indolence, partly from false modesty, partly from a kind of mildness of disposition or weakness of mind, refrain from mentioning a number of their symptoms, describe them in vague terms, or allege some of them to be of no consequence. Like they say, never mind that.
Yeah.
Right?
I think there's another element which isn't included here as a reason why that happens. Some people are used to the idea that no one is interested. No one wants to know. Sometimes you can have a kid who's brought up and any time he complained of anything, his parents would say, you think we want to know? Just get up. Get back on your feet. Get moving. It's considered by some to be a very good upbringing as it toughens kids up. But on the other hand, it can lead adults to a situation where they can never just state that what they're feeling and how they're feeling, because mm-hmm. they were taught to get over themselves and get over what they're feeling and get moving.
Well, I think that relates to the time period in which you were brought up and what was going on around you in the world and in your neighborhood and family, and also to the birth, what birth number you were. So if you were first, you may have been doted upon. If you were second, then maybe less so. You were left to your own. And the third, it depends if it's the last one, whether they're the baby again and then they're cuddled and everything, or whether they are even left further off to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of comes into play too, that there's kind of a reason for the way the person is behaving and caring for themselves and thinking about themselves.
I think
so that might be helpful.
Also, someone brought up the issue of culture in a recent show. There is a cultural issue as well. Like for some people, the culture might say, I think we've mentioned this before as well, the culture might say, don't talk about your symptoms, especially not if you're a man. Another culture would say the doctor is asking all the questions, so you...
Okay, I think we lost a little sound there. The doctor is asking all the questions, and so what should we say?
In some cases, the people will see that they're at the doctor. The doctor is asking questions. They should give full information. Mm-hmm. And in another case, a person might feel if they go into too great detail, they're showing weakness, and the mm-hmm. doctor isn't interested anyway. So so I think there is a cultural aspect. It's possible that a woman is not giving full details because she's embarrassed if she's being treated mm-hmm. by a man, and vice versa. So
right.
I think as homeopaths we should be aware of that, and that will help us identify where perhaps we could get more information about a symptom that's changed in disease than we are actually getting.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's always helpful to ask questions after you've taken a lot of the information in general. Did you have any accidents? Were you ever hospitalized?
Mm-hmm.
What else happened in your past? What happened in your childhood? To ask a couple of things that might bring something back into their memory to refresh them and give them an opportunity to open up about those different areas and even to go through the different body systems. Okay, we've covered all this information now. Was there anything, just do a body scan and see if there's anything that you can think of that you didn't mention before.
Mm-hmm.
That gives them an opportunity, opens up the field.
Okay, shall we move on to 98?
Yes.
Okay, now as certainly as we should listen particularly to the patient's description of his sufferings and sensations, and attach credence especially to his own expressions, wherewith he endeavors to make us understand his ailments, because in the mouths of his friends and attendants they are usually altered and erroneously stated, so certainly, on the other hand, in all diseases, but especially in the chronic ones, the investigation of the true complete picture and its peculiarities demands a special circumspection, tact, knowledge of human nature, caution in conducting the inquiry, and patience in an eminent degree.
Mm-hmm. And should we start from the end, which is where you love to begin? Patience.
Okay.
Patience is so important, to really be able to wait and not interrupt, to be able to wait when giving your remedy and see the action. These kinds of things, on both the part of the homeopath and the patient, is really, he says, in an eminent degree. So, and taking caution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
so we're being really good listeners to the patient's sufferings and moving them along, as you said earlier, to other things so that they can really look within, become more aware of themselves, and give them an opportunity to do that. So there might be quiet moments during the session. It doesn't have to be constant talking.
I think, though, also part of what's going on here as well, what Hanuman is recommending, is that we pay attention during the process, during the progression of the case-taking. For example, at one point I was taught that in every single first case-taking, you have to ask about sexual function, every single one. And if you don't ask about, well, not children, but if you don't ask about sexual function, you are not adequate as a homeopath. You need to go inside yourself and think why. And to my mind, this aphorism says you need circumspection, you need tact, you need to know when it's appropriate to ask questions that are more invasive, where a patient is more open, more willing, or to hold back and to know if you don't get the information in the first session, you'll get it in the second or in the third where trust has been built up. And I find I've checked this back with some of my patients, and they have actually said to me, if you would have asked questions like that in the first session, we would have left you immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is knowing the cultural aspect for sure, and seeing a patient's privacy level. Like sometimes patients, well, I see they could be very private people, but they've decided to reveal all to the homeopath, and they're shaking from it. They're so nervous. It goes so much against the grain for them. And if you make them feel comfortable, make them aware that your focus is on the disease state, what has changed, that you're looking for a way to help. If a question becomes relevant and important to ask, then it will be more like matter of fact. It won't feel so much like an invasion.
Mm-hmm.
But I see that with some people.
And also, if you go to a place where you're kind of getting that touchy sensation that it's hands off, let's not talk about it,
mm-hmm.
you have to be able to recognize that and not push too hard and say, this is, you know, only talk about this if you're comfortable with
mm-hmm.
it. And they'll tell you
yep.
whether they're ready to do it. On the other hand, I've had a couple of people come in and just sit down and start learning all
yes.
about their sexual function, and I have to then keep my calm and composure
yeah.
to say, that's how you walk in and start talking, you know, about discharges and what's happening during sex. So you do have to be cool. Play it cool.
But it is very interesting because some people are very open and very willing to talk. And some people, I think, just really want someone to share all these details with.
Like they haven't before.
Some of them don't. Some of them don't
That's
have
true.
Anyone to share details with. So it's like, oh, wonderful, I can tell this to the homeopath. And you're thinking, oh, no. And then you have other situations where people come and they share life secrets, which they haven't mentioned to a soul.
Yeah.
And I personally find that very heavy. When people
mm-hmm.
do that, it's like then you're carrying around their secret as well.
I don't usually feel that heaviness or feel as if I always, when they say something to me of that nature, that I've never told this to anyone before, and, you know, then I say immediately, this is very confidential. No one is going to know about this. No, I will not speak about this to anyone. And I assure them that it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even at the beginning, you always have a consent form that you have fill out. And it is a client-patient. The relationship is very professional. And if you ever want to use anything, you have to ask permission. So just so like they're assured and you give them that assurance.
I find it heavy, not so much because I'm concerned about whether I'll tell or they're concerned about whether I'll tell. I find it heavy because sometimes the secret that they're carrying around, and very often it's the kind of secret which means they've been living a lie sometimes for 30, 40 years. It's
mm-hmm.
sad. It's sad to me. And I need to put my own thoughts in perspective as I treat the person, not to find that sadness overwhelming.
That's really an excellent point for the homeopath themselves, because it's so easy to get caught up in the story and the life of the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you maintain balance for yourself as the homeopath? What is it that you do to care for yourself, whether it is a mindset that you have, whether you do a meditation, whether you do a clearing of some kind, whether you go from that situation where you yourself might, if they've gone through a horrible experience and they've never told anybody, and then they come and tell you and you want to cry with them, what do you do? Afterward, you cry with them and then you go and wash your face and clear it off.
I was given some very good advice on this, actually from a reflexologist when I was practicing as a reflexologist quite a few years ago. And I brought up the question of empathy in a lesson with one of my teachers. And I said, isn't it important for the practitioner to empathize with the patient? And this teacher actually shouted at me. He said, empathy is the worst thing for you to do. He said, you're there to help the patient, not to climb into his hole.
Mm-hmm.
And it really kind of shocked me into seeing that to some extent, empathizing too much is a certain emotional indulgence that mm-hmm. does not help our patient, does not help us. If we're there mm-hmm. to work with the patient and to find a way to help the patient come out of the whole of his pathology, we need to put empathy on a back burner, very much so. Mm-hmm. So when I'm working with patients, I'm sympathetic, mm-hmm. but I remember this teacher's words and I found them very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think a patient could appreciate and desires a little bit of empathy just for the moment so that he knows that the other person, their heart has been touched and they really do understand how they feel or as much as possible, and then move forward from there.
Mm-hmm.
But, it depends. I don't know how frequently that would need to be happening for the homeopath and the patient relationship.
But trying to think about it from my own situation, times that I've gone for treatment,
mm-hmm.
if I've been upset and felt that the homeopath was crying,
mm-hmm.
I'd feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I'd feel I'm not coming here for you to mm-hmm. cry. I'm literally, as my teacher told me, I'm not coming here for you to climb into my hole of mm-hmm. depression with me. I'm coming here for you to help call mm-hmm. me out. If you're crying too, then what good are you?
Well, it depends. Can you tell whether this person who's sitting in front of you is needing strength and structure and confirmation that you're there to help? Or is this person looking for consolation and a little bit more of that emotional quality? It's possible you're 100% right and you should never climb into that hole. But
I think
it depends.
I think that there are ways to show sympathy, mm-hmm. not empathy, but sympathy, mm-hmm. without climbing into the hole. One of the discussions I would have with myself at the beginning of when I started treating was how much distance is needed between the homeopath and the patient. Now, some homeopaths keep huge distance with the patient and never share anything of their personal life. Some homeopaths, you go there and you tell something and then they spend half an hour telling how they had the exact same thing and it was too much and it was this and that and the other, which also is an excess. I think ultimately everyone needs to find their own personal style. But one of the things that I've found with most people, that if I share a drop of my own experience as a person, as a human being, and then we move on to something else, they feel they've been sympathized with, it's there, we can go on, and they can leave it.
So oh, that's excellent.
Personally, I've moved away from this authoritarian, more conventional doctor-patient style distance.
Mm-hmm.
But Not totally. I mean, I share a little of my experience, but not much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
for what it's worth.
Thank you for being so sympathetic. Okay, now...
let me go cry about that one, Debbie.
I love this. Okay. Do we have time to do any more?
Yeah.
99?
Do 99.
Okay. On the whole, the investigation of acute diseases or of such as have existed but a short time is much the easiest for the physician, because all the phenomena and deviations from the health that has been but recently lost are still fresh in the memory of the patient and his friends, still continue to be novel and striking. The physician certainly requires to know everything in such cases also, but he has much less to inquire into. They are, for the most part, spontaneously detailed to him. Aha. So here he's saying that it's going to just flow out of the person. They're just going to come in and tell you what happened, and it's so fresh in their mind. You know, they've got it right within their reach, within their grasp. They understand and feel it in their body, all of the striking characteristics mm-hmm. to them, that there won't be all this inquiry which has been gone before in the previous aphorisms.
But I keep also with this aphorism, I keep looping back to aphorism number 6, where Hahnemann mm-hmm. tells us that the most important thing, it is number 6, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Where yeah. Hahnemann tells us the most important thing that we're looking for is the deviation from health. That's what gives us the clues. And in the acute disease, Hahnemann does say, because all the phenomena and deviations from the health that has been but recently lost are still fresh in the memory. Because what we're looking for are the phenomena and deviations from health. The word phenomena, it's possible here, it's used where it should be causal event. Mm-hmm. There's a translation issue that comes up in aphorism number 8, which possibly comes up here. Others who are listening to the show may want to comment on that. There's translators, German English speakers amongst you.
Mm-hmm. And you're looking at aphorism number 8?
In aphorism...
Okay. Aphorism number 8 says, after the elimination of all the symptoms and perceptible signs of disease. This is Hunsley, so it might not be your
okay,
translation.
So that's not the translation, okay. but it's sort of along okay. that translation. And
okay.
B. Sarkar, I think it is, in an essay on this, mentions that this has also been defined, that the original German word should have been translated as causal events, not phenomena. So that's something that we'll go into perhaps mm-hmm. more when we get to aphorism 8.
Okay.
Okay.
So how are we doing now?
Let's see. We've got like, I don't know, about 3 more minutes.
Okay.
Shall we just read 100? Let's just
All
read
right.
100 without going into it too much. It's quite an in-depth aphorism, and then we'll read it again tomorrow.
Great.
In investigating the totality of the symptoms of epidemic and sporadic diseases, it is quite immaterial whether or not something similar has ever appeared in the world before under the same or any other name. The novelty or peculiarity of a disease of that kind makes no difference either in the mode of examining or of treating it, as the physician must anyway regard the pure picture of every prevailing disease as if it were something new and unknown, and investigate it thoroughly for itself if he desire to practice medicine in a real and radical manner. Oh, we're in a Hahnemannian sentence here. No full stops. Never substituting
uh-huh.
conjecture for actual observation. Never taking for granted that the case of disease before him is already wholly or partially known, but always carefully examining it in all its phases. And this mode of procedure is all the more requisite in such cases, as a careful examination will show that every prevailing disease is in many respects a phenomenon of a unique character, differing vastly from all previous epidemics to which certain names have been falsely applied, with the exception of those epidemics resulting from a contagious principle that always remains the same, such as smallpox, measles, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Phew. I think there is one full stop in that entire effort.
Hi, I'm Debbie.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.